This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 32. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-323-97543.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. Welcome to the show, Garris. Welcome to the show, Berners. How are we all?
Yeah, not bad, actually. Not bad. Got a couple of days just trying to catch up on some admin after gallivanting around the world for the last couple of weeks.
So, wonderful.
Yeah, so it's a bit dull, but, you know, never mind. At least I can talk about cricket with you guys.
Yes, exactly.
All good here. Thanks, Coach. I've been ringing India all day and wondering why no one's answering, and it's because it's Independence Day.
Good point, that, mate. Good point.
You see, now you're giving away the secrets of the day that we record this show as well, Berners. So, luckily, all the content on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show is completely timeless.
Well, it's not actually. I don't think it's actually today. It's in a couple of days' time, but they have. I think they just take a week. As they like to do.
they like a preparation phase, don't they?
Yeah.
They like a party as well.
Correct.
As do we all.
Absolutely.
Speaking of parties, as three English men, it's not only an Ashes victory or a retention of the Ashes for England, but now it's a series victory for England. And there's an interesting story around Ian Bell to do with his career rise, as marked by his Ashes performances. You were there at the beginning, Garris?
Yeah, no, I was, and it's been brilliant. I actually sent a message to him via Andy Flower yesterday, just to say well done, because, you know, as people have quite rightly pointed out, Belly's gone from somebody who took a bit of stick from Mr. Warne and others in 2005 and has grown steadily to be probably the difference between the two sides in many ways over the course of the last few weeks. Those 300s that he scored all came under pressure. And one of the criticisms that he has faced, which I think has been a bit unfair, actually, is that he's only scored hundreds when the going's been easy. But none of those situations, he came in 40 for 3, 30 for 3, and changed the complexion of the game just through some great skill and doing all the things that we know he can do. So I'm dead pleased for Belly. He's really, really taken the series by storm, and I think this will make him as a player in years to come.
It's a great example, isn't it, for young players who can see someone who came into the England side as a young man, technically very good, scored his runs on the posh side, as they like to say, and looked like the complete batsman technically, and then was found out mentally early on his career and overcame those troubles. And now, in terms of his character on the field, he seems like a completely different batsman. Even though he looks the same, you know, technically he's very similar. Mentally, he's a very different approach to the game.
Yeah, definitely. And it takes people a different amount of time. But I don't think he's, you know, some people are saying he's just found it now. Well, I think there's been evidence that that's been developing over the last couple of years. And it's not just in this series that he's played innings of note and under pressure. It's been in other ones as well. Now, obviously, the eyes of the world are on this series, probably more so than any other series in the international calendar. So it gives it a bit more credence and probably spreads the name of Ian Bell across the world a bit more. But as you say, a fantastically technically correct batter. But it's just been brilliant to see him under pressure come through and show everything that we saw years ago. But it goes again to show that we have to be patient with players, don't we? You know, we can't just expect young players to come in, do really well and then sustain it over a period of time. I think one of the biggest virtues of the great coaches is their patience.
Do you think it's something that just clicks with a player? Is one day he just turns around and goes, ah, suddenly I've got it? Or is it a long, slow thing that gradually changes over time?
I think it varies from person to person. I had a great conversation with Marcus Trescothick when he came back from England for the first time back to Somerset, And I said to him, you know, when did you know that you were ready for it and you could cope with it? And he said, well, as I walked out for the first time, I looked around the ground and just felt that this is where I needed to play my cricket. You know, and that was in front of a packed house against, I think it was Pakistan or somebody back in the early 2000s. But he felt completely at home, and obviously things tested that over a period of time. But you know, he found it straight away, whereas Belly probably wouldn't tell you quite so freely where he found it or not. Probably an evolution, and I think, you know, he's always been able to do it against certain opposition, and now he's found a way of doing it against all oppositions and even under the biggest pressure, and that's really a really great thing to have, and I think he's grown into it over a period of time. The next quest for him is to do it even more consistently. You know, it's probably unrealistic to expect him to score, you know, 400s per 5-match series or, you know, every time he goes into bat. But I think you'll probably see a bigger correlation between times where England are struggling and he comes to a party. And that's been the biggest thing in this series. He's done it 3 times. KP came to the party in the last Test match and really played the innings of note that gave him a great chance of saving the game, as it was in that context. So those middle order guys, it's vital that they get their runs when it isn't easy, isn't it? Because, you know, anybody can get knocked over by the newish bowlers. Has happened a lot in this series, but it's been the quality of number 4 and number 5 in particular in this series for England that has been the difference.
Ben, as you've played club cricket for a number of years now, you must have seen youngsters come in who weren't quite ready for it, and they've found their way.
Yeah, I think just like Gareth says, the right mix of everything, and then having the past experiences that all come together, and suddenly you find that ability to make that score, or you know, you hit that certain note at the level which can really kick you into gear. I think it's massively to do with confidence, and also I guess a lot of those players, they almost preempt, don't they, what's going to happen? They visualize a lot of the scenarios they're in. They know the players, they know their actions, they know the stadiums, they understand the noise and the atmosphere, and then you know they can activate a plan. But yeah, it was brilliant. Bell's great to watch when he's in full flow. I thought Bresnan was an unsung hero as well, because his small yet reactive contribution with bat and ball really, I think, knocked Australia back onto the back foot, that 40, and then he got a couple of critical wickets at a difficult time, just holding his line, and built frustration into the Aussies, who were starting to look quite good for a certain period of that innings. But yeah, it was great to watch. Good for the game.
What's the message here for coaches and players who are watching the Ashes and thinking to themselves, what lesson can I learn from these types of situations? What would you say to them, Gareth?
Well, I'm interested. I mean, I watched Darren Lehman's interview today, and I thought it was fantastic, actually, where he's put the pressure back on the players and said, you know, it's great that we're picking up this experience and we're getting close and we're competing for large periods of time. But ultimately, it's down to performances, and he's put the pressure back on the players. And I'm going to be interested to see the results. Also, putting the pressure back onto the players is one thing, but I think then you've got to be very good in review. Even if you're winning and you're in Andy Flower's position, you want to see how we can get better. Equally, if you're in Darren Lehman's position, right, okay, let's recognise and identify the parts of a game that we haven't been skillful enough in, and let's put some work in before the next test match to try and remedy that. So I think review at any level is really important, whether you're on the front foot and winning games of cricket, or whether you're coming out off second best as the Australians are, because ultimately, who does the best review between now and the Oval is going to start off in a good position, I think. And I know that England are very good at review, having been in the camp and particularly working with Andy Flower. I'm intrigued to see how Michael Clarke and Darren Lehman, who have been impressive during the last few weeks together, how they go about the review, having lost the series and being 3-0 down. It would be great if they could turn it around and really be competitive and at the Oval. As I say, my fear is that it's a good venue for England, and it's been a long tour for the Australians.
Well, let's wrap this up now, this section up with our yes/no round. 3 questions that Berners has got for us. And Gareth and I can only say yes or no.
Okay. First question. Is back-to-back Ashes overkill?
No.
Yes.
Second question. DRS will bring spinners back?
Yes.
Yes.
Third question. Brute strength has replaced technical mastery?
No.
No.
Okay, it's time to open the mailbag, and every week, of course, we have a couple of questions which are sent in by listeners to the show, readers of the Pitch Vision Academy website, and the best question of the week wins a prize, which is, of course, an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. Berners, you've got the first of the two questions this week. Fire away.
I do. Our first question comes in from Alex, and he's saying that he plays for a relatively small club that has three Saturday teams and a cult section from under 13 down to under 7, which is absolutely massive and getting bigger all the time. So he's saying that as these cults get slightly older, there isn't enough space for them to be accommodated in their third team, so therefore they don't play. Opportunities are limited and they can't showcase their skills. So he was thinking of starting a developmental side next season, and he's just asking for our expert panel's best advice on how to do this, what sort of standard of opposition should be put up against them, and also what's the best makeup of the side. So bearing in mind some youngsters, some slightly senior players, from our experiences, how do we think this might work?
I think that's a really interesting question, and I'm going to be very fascinated by your thoughts on this, Gareth. My opinion is that the key to something like this is to be flexible. If you don't set anything particularly in stone, then you can fit the side to get the best results for the type of thing that you're looking for. If the aim of the team is to help young players make the transition from junior cricket into senior cricket outside of the normal league setup structure that you've got there, because there isn't enough places in the side, which is a great problem to have, then I guess a good place to start is to think to yourself, how many young players have I got who are potential players who can play in this developmental side? And then you work from there to see how many other players you've got, experienced players you've got to bring in to help them out. I mean, ideally, you're going to want a couple at least of more experienced players to help you out, but it depends on availability. Club level is availability is always a question mark, isn't it? So, you know, being able to balance the side is a key thing. You don't want to go crazy with lots of experienced players because that's not the point of the side, but you also don't want to have too many youngsters. You've got a team of youngsters, then I think you're missing an opportunity for a more senior player to help you out. So that'd be the first place I look. And then in terms of the opposition, again, it depends on who you can find. If you're looking to play midweek or Sunday type games, maybe even Saturday afternoon games, but I think probably midweek or Sunday games are your best bet, then you can pick up against friendly 11s of other sides who are of variable quality. I know where I am, and I think across the UK, in fact, there's a club called the 40 Club, which has over 40 players who play regularly against developmental sides. That's a good experience for younger players playing up against wily old spinners and batsmen who value their wicket greatly. So that might be a good area to look against sides with more experienced players, so they can pick up a few tricks along the way from the opposition as well. Those are my couple of thoughts. Where are you with this, Gareth?
Yeah, I've been at a couple of clubs that have had the same brilliant predicament of having excellent cult sections or junior sections, and then having to build development sides to accommodate those players and that interest. So firstly, Alex, well done on having a club that's generated that interest and supported those young players through their cricket careers to date. My advice would be, get two or three really good guys who have played a lot of cricket that are probably at the wrong end of their career, My dad did this actually. He dropped down to a development side, probably when he could have played in the seconds, to be honest, to go and captain that. And a couple of guys went with him. You know, they thought their role, instead of holding people back in the seconds, was to help bring some of the youth players through. And and two or three of them made that journey down to what was called the fourth team or the development team. And you don't want too many, as you say. I thought that was a very valid point. But obviously, you've got to get the commitment of those two or three or four players to be there week in, week out, because that continuity for the youngsters is very important. And let's be honest, the youngsters are probably going to be unavailable a few times in the season. So it's really important that you've got the continuity of the senior players. And also, with the huge number of players that you've got in the Colts section, it won't be a problem to bring a few of those up and give them an opportunity in that development 11. So yeah, three or four senior players, absolutely crucial. The second bit I'd say is I'd actually go towards, you're right, you're absolutely right about the 40 clubs and the other nomadic clubs that play. There's a great opportunity to play against them in midweek. But actually, I think Saturdays are a good time to play, because there are a lot of clubs nowadays that are having the same challenges in terms of their playing numbers that you're talking about here with their young players. So it would be worthwhile using your local county cricket board as maybe, or a forum on there to maybe say, you know, this is what we're planning to do. Is anybody in a similar position? And you'll be surprised at how many clubs and well-organised clubs will be in a similar position to this. So ask about. You might even get some clubs from other county boards coming across and playing against you. So I wouldn't completely dismiss the Saturday thing. And the benefit of Saturday is, you know, you have parents that may be available to drive people around instead of it just being down to the three or four guys that are the senior stalwarts of a team. Inevitably, they're going to have full cars anyway, from my experience. But you know, if you can get a couple of parents helping out, that would be absolutely fantastic. So yeah, Saturday would be the way to go. And the only thing you've got to factor in there is ground availability. And that's where, you know, a link into your local school, for example, and even if you're playing on artificial wickets, just to get that quality fixture out, being played around some senior experienced players will be absolutely brilliant for the young players. So those are the main things. And I think you'll be really pleasantly surprised about how many other clubs would be thinking along these lines within a relatively local area to yourself. So give that a go. Use your county board as a sounding board. They'll have a good idea of who are in similar positions. There are some great forums on some county board sites that you can look at and put a question out there. And I'm sure that you'll pick up a number of fixtures through that sort of medium.
We've already got a development league here in Middlesex. The guys play on Sunday. You've got to have two players above 25 and the others have to be below 25.
Brilliant.
And, that's great.
It mixes every week because, like you say, you do have the problem with selection. So you could have a 13-year-old in there and you come up against all kinds of different sides, and it's quite fun, but it's serious. And the idea being that all the clubs are playing their best youngsters. But development by name, development by nature. I don't think anyone really cares if they lose. So I think it goes really well, actually. I've been asked a couple of times to play, but unfortunately the two-game scenario on a weekend doesn't suffice for fairness. Our next question comes in from Samish, and he's saying that he trains for about half an hour every day. During this time, he's normally concentrating on bowling, but for the last couple of days, he's had a bit of a mild hamstring strain. So he's asking what he can do to firstly get rid of this pain and hopefully in the future prevent this from happening.
From the outline of a question, Chamisha, I would suggest that you're fatiguing yourself by doing the same thing every single day. So the mild hamstring strain, if it is mild, then it's probably a grade one. And if it's a grade one, then you'll definitely need to stay off bowling and running around for a few days, sort of 4 to 5 days, 4 to 6 days, I think is the recommended, and then review from that point onwards. So rest is very good for you. And when I say rest, it doesn't mean to say that you don't do some work on your core or you do some flexibility away from your hamstrings. Just lay off for bowling. I think you probably need to put a program together which varies a little bit rather than just concentrating on the bowling side of things. So if you do alternate days, keep an eye on your workloads, keep an eye on the number of balls that you're bowling. And what we've found, and this is at top level, admittedly, so the guys that have been training for a number of years, that as soon as a bowler goes over 30 overs in any given week, then they become, and they do that for 2 or 3 weeks on the trot, then they become highly susceptible to injury. So, you know, if you're doing half an hour every day and training on your bowling, plus your match time, then it could be that you're getting up into those hot areas on a regular basis. So just be aware of your workloads, just be aware of the volume of your bowling. Give yourself a 4 to 6 day window of non-bowling, then review your hamstring strain and see how it is, and without, you know, being able to see actions and things like that, I think that's a really good starting point. Workload, volume, and try and give yourself a little bit of a rest for the next few days.
Yeah, they call it the red zone, don't they? That's the buzzword that you're around with.
Yeah, red zone when you start to get a bit hot.
Yep.
In terms of your bowling numbers, that's exactly right, yeah.
Yeah, and there is a direct correlation between those numbers. I mean, it doesn't mean that automatically after 30 overs that's going to happen, but you know, you do see a statistical noticeable increase in those numbers. So, you know, it's important to bear those things in mind. And there are bowling guidelines around which you can keep an eye on. And they're not plucked from the air, those numbers. They are numbers which are backed by research into these kind of things. So that's definitely worth looking at. I'd say once you are recovered and once you've finished having any problems with hamstrings, as well as managing your workload, you can also do some simple things to make sure that you prevent it from happening again in the future. And a lot of it is to do with the glute muscles, because often the hamstrings are working overtime because the glute muscles aren't strong enough to do the job that you need them to do. And, you know, when people talk about fast bowlers, they always used to talk about a fast bowler's bottom being big, didn't they? That was one of the classic ways to work out if someone's a fast bowler or not. And there is a scientific reason for that. The strong glutes are a very important part of being able to bowl. So if you're going to train anything, then training the glutes is a great place to start, to not only prevent hamstring strains, but just to make you a better bowler all round. And the two ways to train up is to strengthen with things like glute bridges. I saw an interesting exercise which I've not seen done on a cricket pitch before. I've seen done in the gym before, which is resisted glute bridges. Have you seen those, Gareth, where you have a weight across your pelvic region and you lift up using your glutes as to lift the bar up? Have you seen those?
Yeah, no, I have seen that. Yes, yeah,
Yeah.
I've not done, and I won't be doing it, but yes, I have seen it.
A coach who we both know well told me that Chris Tremley, England's Chris Tremley, is a bit of a beast at those. And in the gym, he can do 180 kilos for four with those, so that's pretty strong.
That's up there, that.
It's good glutes. And then the other thing is stretching, of course. You know, active stretching, foam rolling, and static stretching are all things that you can do. Not your traditional hamstring stretch where you bend over and touch your toes necessarily, but stretching around those areas and doing foam rolling, which I always talk about to help the muscles, help unglue anything that's glued up in there. So those are basic things that you can do. They don't take very long. That you can use them before as you can do them all in your warm up before you start bowling. And that will just help reduce the chances of you getting a hamstring injury. And then when you manage your workload on top of that as well, you should be pretty good to go. I mean, nothing's going to prevent a hamstring strain completely, but those are stacking the odds greatly in your favour. Where are you with hammies burners? Do you ever get any trouble with your hammies?
I play quite a bit of squash, so luckily I stretch a bit after that. Not really. I've been pretty injury free, except for when I broke my neck, of course, which was a bit of a downer. But you know, these things happen.
Yeah, that's slightly different from a hamstring strain. It is one of those things that is preventable, though. That's the good thing about hamstring strains. You can dramatically reduce the odds of getting them by doing some work.
Yeah, definitely stretching, and also a lot of the guys I play with, squash that is, they use the old foam rollers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, brilliant they are.
Just drive some blood into there, and it's quite easy. You can sit watching TV doing it, and it's only 5-10 minutes a day, but just to loosen it up and keep going. I suffer more from calf and Achilles kind of pains, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Not hamstrings. I don't do enough on a cricket field, certainly, for that, but I always find it's quite dangerous if you turn up and you don't warm up and you go out and bat and you're running a quick single, suddenly you feel everything going a bit twanging and twinging and you're out there trying to stretch when it's all a bit too late. So, good warm up is essential.
Yeah, exactly. And some key exercises is important as well. And yeah, you don't leave it to chance, because it doesn't take a lot of time to do these things. It doesn't take a lot of effort to do these things. It makes hamstrings are one of those injuries that you can prevent or drastically reduce the chance of getting them quite easily with just a little bit of work. So it's hopefully that's going to help you out, Samish, and get you to bowling in healthy ways rather than trying to bowl through the pain of a hamstring injury, because that's never fun and you'll end up worse. Okay, so let's now head to the newsroom where Daisy Carter is waiting with this week's Pitch Vision headlines.
Thank you, David. Hi, I'm Daisy Carter and this is the Pitch Vision News. Bangladesh A team review Pitch Vision. The touring international team are testing pitch vision as part of their tour to England during the UK summer. Head coach Richard McInnes will be leading the team through their paces at Lord's before the ODI series starts against England's Lions. This week's focus of Pitch Vision Interactive are the Boundary Kings. The 200 runs in Boundaries Mark is the golden standard. Users BeppyX and Keoli A75 are both in the exclusive club with 208 runs and 206 runs respectively. Right on their tails are Kershaw on 194 and Bothan on 192.
Thank you very much, Daisy, and we will, of course, see you again next week. And now, 60 seconds of Mark Garraway goodness, because we have this week's soapbox. 60 seconds of Garra's being able to talk about whatever he wants. Over to you, Garra's, starting now.
Well, he was mentioned earlier in the show, but I'm going to talk about Tim Bresnan, actually, and his impact on the England cricket team. And I'm sure that we've got many Tim Bresnans around the country who are doing their job day in, day out, that are highly valued by the people inside the team, but possibly get a little bit of stick from the media or the local cricket experts that sit in the bar and watch from afar through the bottom of their pint glass or wine glass. And Tim Bresnan, somebody who's a man for all occasions, and he came to the party yesterday with the bat, gets crucial wickets, throws himself around in the field. But more importantly than that, his team know that when it comes down to it, that Tim Bresnan will always be there for them, will always come up with the goods when it gets really grubby and really difficult. And I reckon there's numbers of those guys all around the country. I certainly played with a few. And all I'm asking for is for people just to look through a different pair of eyes when they're assessing this type of cricketer.
Yes, I've got another name for you. Someone who equally fits, very different type of player, but equally fits into that category of the reliable guy. Ashley Giles, of course, England's now one-day coach.
Correct.
Always underrated, never overrated.
You know, there's often a good reason why they get picked on a regular basis, and they offer things that may not be as obvious to the outside world. But when you talk to any of their teammates, you know, they'd be one of the first people in the side. When you talk to the media, often they're the first person that would be out. You know, rarely does a test go by where Tim Bresnan isn't being compared to Onions or Tremlett or somebody like that. Yeah. But comes to the party when it matters. And I've played with a heap at club level and at county level. It may not be easy on the eye, but I wouldn't go into battle without them. We'll be right back.
So you know what that music means by now. If you're a regular listener to the show, we're going to wrap things up. Just before we do, we've got a decision to make. Or Gareth has, at least. We have to decide what the best question of the week was. So we had Alex's question about setting up a development team. And we had Samish's question about training for half an hour every day and a hamstring strain. And one of those is going to win the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So which one did you prefer, Gareth? The moment of truth.
I'm going to go with Alex's question today. I thought it was a fantastic one about development sides. And this is going to become more and more prevalent over the next few years in many countries around the world. So hopefully we've given a few tips on how to maximise its effectiveness when you're setting one up.
Well done, Alex. And there's some courses there for coaches where you might want to have a look at them and see if there's any advice you can pick up from one of our premium courses on pitchvision.com/academy. So, Berners, if someone wanted to send in their question, get it answered, and also have the chance of winning that prize, what would they need to do?
They can give us a call at 020-323-97543, or they can drop us an email, coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, indeed. Our Twitter is also available at PV Cricket Coach. And you can head over to our Facebook, give us a thumbs up there, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. If you want to listen to the show every week, I would recommend you head over to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and you'll find us in there. Just click on the subscribe link and you'll get the show every week without having to check back. Comes out every Friday. And if you don't want to use iTunes, you can use any podcatching program. And if you want to do that, just go to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link for all the details on how to do that. So that's all for this week. Until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.